This is Fully Vested, a weekly podcast where Jason Rowley and Graham Peck discuss technology and venture capital investing. This week, after an update about 3,000 newly announced layoffs at Uber, we discuss Facebook's acquisition of Giphy for $400 million and Andreessen Horowitz's investment in the hotly contested Clubhouse. This show was recorded on May 18th. You can learn more at fullyvested.co.
Now or forever hold your peace. Oh, wait. Not now. Not now. See, when I said just, now, I didn't mean now.
See, I just hit record. I just got the last bit of that. I just got the last little bit of that choice. Graham rant? Is that the word? Is that the word we
want to
use?
Something like that.
Something like that.
So, Jason, are you well versed in 80s trivia?
What facets of 80s trivia? Like, I mean, as a child, I'm born in 1990. So, you know, everything.
Ooh.
Why do you ask?
Well, I'm doing an 80s trivia night tomorrow night. I mean, I'm participating in one. I'm not hosting it. I make the answer sheet that people can fill out, but I don't know what the questions are even. I was just doing that to help a friend. The categories are 80s blockbusters, 80s fashion, which some people might say I'm still stuck in, I guess. 80s general knowledge, 80s cult classics. I want my MTV and one hit wonders of the 80s. So.
Graham, I think that I would be as flattered as I am about the offer. I think that I would be the slow wildebeest on your trivia team.
Oh, well, normally that's the position I occupy, about the 80s.
I would be the one that the, in this case, hopefully strictly only metaphorical lions, would eat, because I don't know nothing about the 80s before my time, Graham.
Oh yeah, well, it's not that I remember the 80s, but yeah, well, I guess that was that was an advertisement for my friend's virtual trivia night that she hosts.
Yeah, anybody who wants to participate in Graham's friend's trivia night can go find Graham on the twitter.com machine and or email him at his full name at gmail.com. Is that correct? Yes or no?
Yeah. Vaguely? No.
Plus or minus?
No.
Go harass Graham and go join in us on his trivia night.
The 80s will be over by the time this this airs, but yeah.
We
do it weekly.
You know, speaking of the 80s, tomorrow, I believe, is the, as we record, it's either today or tomorrow. What is today?
I think it's today as we record.
Well, God.
Oh,
it's too late. It's too late in the evening, Graham. What was I saying? It's either today or tomorrow as we record we hit the 40th anniversary of the explosion of the Mount St. Helens volcano in Washington State. A 1980 event.
Wow. I did not know that.
Now you do.
I mean, well, that could be helpful in the general knowledge section tomorrow, I guess.
I might even be saying that this is an explosive fact.
Mm. Yeah, right. Well, I'm not that old, so I wasn't alive then, thankfully.
Mm. Yeah, that was a full decade before my time. But happy anniversary, I guess.
Ooh,
I don't know. I mean, how do you say how do you mark the explosion of a volcano 40 years later? Is it with happiness, sadness?
I don't know. What are we going to be saying 40 years from now about today?
Well, Graham, this is assuming that any of us make it out of this alive.
Oh, that's a good point. Well, if you got them, smoke them or drink them, I guess. cheers.
Cheers. Shoot, where's my seltzer? Graham.
I have some beer here from America's oldest continuously operating brewery. Do you know where that is, Jason?
Are you talking about the Yingling Brewery in Pottsville, Pennsylvania?
That's
not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor. Not yet. We got to get them as a sponsor.
We'll take your money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hear that, Yingling? We'll take your money.
DG Yingling and Son Inc. in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Yep. One of my favorite beers. Anyway, not available in Illinois. I continue to want to buy the rights.
To distribute it in Illinois?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure that would be a lucrative venture.
Yeah, you'd think so. I think people have tried. I don't know why it's not available in our fine state.
Well, later, after we record, I am going to enjoy a, what is it? It's from the Pipeworks Brewing Company called Ninja versus Unicorn, whatever it's called.
Ooh, very apropos for our podcast, right?
Well, see, now they also did another IPA in their series called Science versus Unicorn, which I maintain is the probably the best title for an article about billion-dollar technology companies and their downfall that I've ever heard in my life.
Have you ever written such a titled article?
No.
Does Golden have a cluster, Graham, called this?
Spoiler alert. We gotta introduce ourselves in a minute.
By the way, the reason I wanted to invite you to be on my trivia team live on the podcast was just to prove to our vast listening audience that you and I are actually offline friends in like the real world.
Was there ever any doubt?
Oh no, I just wanted listeners, incontrovertible proof.
Listeners.
Is that even a word?
No, Graham, you butchered it. It's incontrovertible.
Yeah, I messed that one up.
Listeners, you got to understand something. Graham and I, we've known each other for better and worse for what is it? 3-4 years now? Something like that.
I don't know.
It's been a long time.
3-4 years and this whole pandemic, which is like, a whole nother decade.
I mean, this past month has been the longest year of my life.
That's right. Oh, man.
Graham,
we're getting into better spirits here.
Well,
I feel like we've been really like raining on the parade on a lot of our episodes lately.
Speaking of raining on parades,
let the storm clouds open up.
All right. So, well, hey, no, actually, Graham, come on. We have some nominally good news, better news, best news, good news. We're talking about at least good news from the end of last week. The acquisition of Giphy by Facebook, which may or may not be good news, as we will discuss. Also the deal struck with Clubhouse, which in case anybody here has been living under a rock, is one of the hottest social networking apps to come out fairly recently, and the round that they raised from Andreessen Horowitz. But first, Graham, before we get to any of that, we should introduce ourselves, and then I have to rain on everybody's parade with some recent news from today.
You go first.
Okay. Hey, everybody. My name is Jason Rowley. I am your co-host of this little podcast D-type show called Fully Vested. When I'm not doing that, I am, for my day job, a researcher at a company called Golden, which you can visit at golden.com. Or golden.co, both of which will redirect to the main website. And then whenever I'm not doing that, I do some volunteer work with the Python Software Foundation, helping early stage startups get booth space at PyCon US. What else do I have to share about myself? Not much. Graham, who are you? What do you do? What brings you here?
Yeah, my name is Graham Peck. I am a venture partner at Cultivation Capital. Cultivation is a St. Louis-based VC. I am part of our team in our Chicago office when that's open during non-COVID times. At Cultivation, we invest in ag tech, ag science, and life sciences companies, as well as specifically the team that I'm part of, which is our technology group that invests in B2B SaaS companies at late seed and early Series A stage. In addition to that work, I also am a partner in a cybersecurity firm. And I also help companies, large and small, build their technology teams with some partners in Eastern Europe at Brightgrove.
Cool.
So, Jason, you've got an update that begins the torrential downpour of raining on our parade here.
Hey. The later topics are not, they do not. There's not a lot of raining on any parades there. This is a mostly good news show. But I'd be remiss to not mention the fact that as of today, e.g., Monday, May 18th, year of our Lord 2020, Dara Khosrowshahi emailed Uber staff notifying them that there will be 3,000 additional jobs cut. At least as of today, including a number of software engineers there, which, Graham, I know that last week we discussed is both the some of the most expensive talent to acquire and some of the most expensive talent to retain at any technology-enabled company. In addition, Uber will close 45 offices around the world. And let's see what other stuff. So this is on top of a cut of 3,700 jobs that came through earlier this month, meaning that in total, Uber has cut coming up on 7,000 jobs over the last 30-day period, on top of additional engineering and other layoffs that have occurred over the last 6 months. And we're talking about an organization that is nominally employed about 20,000 people in total across the globe, not including its massive pool of drivers, which Uber insists still are to be classified as independent contractors, removing their eligibility for things like health insurance and retirement benefits and unemployment insurance and all the other really important things that one might need in this extraordinary time that we're all living through. So Graham, stuff is not so rosy over at what employees of the company have affectionately or not so affectionately called the Death Star.
Ooh, I was gonna say the ride hailing giant, but okay.
Well, the Death Star is a long-standing nickname for Uber among Uber employees. Fun fact.
There you go. Well, that's not great. No. So that's approaching a third of their workforce, give or take.
Something like that.
Obviously. How many offices is it disclosed? How many offices Uber has worldwide? I mean, 45 offices sounds like a lot. I know we talked about last week that I think they're closing something like 180 or so driver support locations. Maybe they were called green offices or something. I don't know. There was some sort of term for like the driver support places, and they were closing a lot of those too.
My goodness.
45 strikes me as a lot of offices to be closing, even if you've got 20,000 employees.
I don't know exactly how many offices they have, but I mean, one can assume that they have some flavor of operating base, even if it's very small, in most of the major metropolitan areas in which they operate. The only thing that came through was the Wall Street Journal reporting, reading the second paragraph of the article by, Preetika Rana says, Mr. Khosrowshahi announced the plans in an email to staff Monday, less than 2 weeks after the company said it would eliminate 3,700 jobs and plan to save more than $1 billion in fixed costs. Monday's decision to close 45 offices and lay off some 3,000 more people means Uber is shedding roughly a quarter of its workforce in under a month's time. Drivers aren't classified as employees, so they are not included.
Wow.
Yeah. So no word on how many offices exactly they have, but or they have exactly. Grammar is hard. It does not seem that things are going well over at Uber.
Definitely not.
On slightly nicer news, pivoting away from Uber for the rest of this episode, there was a really interesting acquisition that went, well, at least that was announced on this past Friday that I wanted us to take a hot minute to discuss. You up for it?
Absolutely.
All right.
I think you're talking about Facebook's announced acquisition of Giphy for $400 million.
Is it Giphy or Jiffy?
Yeah, that's always the question. Well, Jiffy's the peanut butter company, right?
Yeah.
But how do you say it? Oh, boy. Oh, no. This isn't the debate we're going to have now, is it?
I mean, you asked. You asked, buddy. So this is a hotly. So first off, whenever somebody says, oh, how is it pronounced? It's like, oh, it's pronounced like the G in GIF. But it's my understanding. So I might have this wrong, but I refer to it as GIF with a hard G.
But yeah, isn't that what I just said?
No. Well, yeah, but it's also my understanding that the creator of the file format pronounces it Jiffy or GIF.
Oh.
As if it was
all right.
JIF.
Hmm.
Not GIF. This is the most irrelevant line of conversation I think that we've ever had on the show.
And that's saying something.
That is an accomplishment. Speaking of accomplishments, on Friday, Axios broke the news that Facebook was going to acquire popular GIF sharing and search platform Giphy, reportedly for $400 million. Giphy is reportedly going to retain its branding and will have some of its functionality wrapped into Instagram. Now, this is some relevant financial details from other the backstory of Giphy. Founded in, I think, 2013 or 2014, based in New York. They have a really, really nice office at the in the Meatpacking District in Manhattan. How do I know that? I hosted a pitch event at Giphy HQ. It was great a couple of years ago. But Giphy had raised north of $150 million in equity funding. Its last reported private market valuation was around $600 million, which Giphy earned in its $72 million Series D round from October 31st, 2016. In other words, you know, so like if Giphy had previously raised it a $600 million valuation and it sold at a $400 million valuation, it means that some of its investors, specifically at later stage, may have taken a little bit of a haircut. And while the liquidation preference stack at Giphy is not public knowledge, I think we can surmise that at least something has gone back to common shareholders, though it is unclear exactly how much. Is that a fair-ish reading of the top line numbers?
Yeah, I think so. You know, and we've talked about liquidation preferences before at great and maybe nauseating length, but it would certainly be interesting in a big deal like this to see what actually happened. But obviously, when you've got a $600 million valuation and you sell for $400 million, somebody didn't get what they were looking for.
I mean, we're still talking about lots of millions, though.
It's a lot. Yeah,
it's a lot of millions.
Hundred.
It's several. Oh my
God.
Graham,
it's a lot.
It's almost that's some high quality financial mathematics right there.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So there's a lot of questioning as to what exactly had motivated this deal. You know, obviously, these days, having, if you're a social app of any variety, having some sort of GIF search functionality is, to borrow, you know, phrasing from other folks, you know, it's sort of table stakes, these days. But you know, one wonders whether that was the main motivating factor here.
Yeah, you know, and it obviously is interesting, you know, times for really any kind of business deal. And that's kind of been a theme of what we've been talking about recently. You know, one of the things that we reviewed and will, of course, include in the show notes, you know, mentioned that Facebook, I think, had been looking for a deeper and more strategic partnership with Giphy since, you know, approximately last November. I think only more recently, there was some speculation, maybe because of, you know, cash burn, but that the talks turned to acquisition. So I think that's interesting to think about. I mean, my guess, just putting together two or three pieces of information from the articles we read to be prepared for this, maybe they were running out of money and needed another fundraising round, which obviously is going to be difficult to put together in large scale in these interesting times.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't have any, I'm not operating on any sort of like information from any sources apart from like media coverage. But it's my understanding that, Giphy was on the fundraising trail, or at least went out onto the fundraising trail relatively recently. And, you know, it could have been sometime in February or March of 2020 that they went out to go raise money, potentially sought out Facebook as a strategic investor in, you know, in the company for obvious reasons. Again, that sort of, to use a little bit of a business MBA lingo there from the 1990s, a little bit of hashtag synergy. Between Giphy's sort of product offering and Facebook's. You know, one thing led to another, as things often do. And instead of Facebook either leading or participating in a funding round raised by Giphy, Facebook ended up acquiring Giphy instead.
You know, one of the things that I think is most interesting, and obviously what a couple of these articles are also centered around, is what Facebook will potentially do to not exactly exploit, but potentially use data.
Oh, you can use the word exploit.
In interesting ways. Okay. What Facebook might do to exploit Giphy users' data. You know, and we talked in a, I think, pre-launch episode, I believe, of our podcast about, you know, email tracking pixels at great length, specifically centered around kind of superhuman, although that's common technology. Seems like similar technology, whether it's literally a tracking pixel or not, something of that kind to track user data, in many cases, even behind relatively protected kind of systems. So things like end-to-end encrypted messaging platforms, you know, are now serving out data, you know, about their users, even if it's anonymized and not tagged to one user, if you're inputting GIFs through the Giphy platform.
Yeah, I mean, because here's the thing, you know, the angle that Facebook could have on the is exploiting the word that we really want to use. No, we'll use more corporate friendly lingo and say that Facebook could leverage
there you go.
Leverage the data stream coming off of their newly acquired property or soon to be possibly acquired property, Giphy. Because, you know, Giphy's functionality is integrated into a bunch of different platforms that Facebook nominally competes with. Graham, you can correct me if I'm wrong. You may or may not know off the top of your head, but It's my understanding that Giphy is the back end search functionality behind Twitter, for example, Twitter's GIF search functionality.
I think that's right.
It's also a major component of Apple's iMessage GIF search and integration functionality. And as well is present in a number of other major social networking platforms. And, you know, I know that, you know, folks smarter than I, you know, had discussed that since GIF search and GIF integration and GIF embedding are sort of table stakes in the world of social media application platforms these days, and Giphy is the market leader in terms of market share, this could end up giving Facebook an interesting, if somewhat imprecise, understanding of the types of companies, of the companies that are using Giphy's infrastructure, and in turn use this as a little bit of a competitive intelligence tool, so that Facebook might be able to get a peek into the up-and-coming companies that are using Giphy, which may in turn present some sort of a threat to Facebook in the long run, which could give Facebook the opportunity to view these would-be competitors as acquisition or funding targets to sort of subvert their ascendance or rise to becoming a possible full-fledged competitor to Facebook itself.
Do you think that that's what Facebook is angling for here, is getting data on competitive or potentially competitive websites? You think they're trying to acquire Giphy for purposes of sophisticated corporate espionage?
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time.
That's a good point.
Like,
and you're referring to their acquisition of, oh boy, I'm going to get the name wrong.
Yeah,
Onavo?
Onavo. Yeah.
Onavo.
Your guess of pronunciation of that is as good as mine. Yeah, like, so a little while back, Facebook acquired this VPN app called Onavo. I unfortunately don't have the details in front of me as we're recording. But it was this VPN app installed on users' mobile devices that did ostensibly a lot of the VPN type, you know, performed a lot of the function, did a lot of the functionality that people expect out of VPNs. But VPNs also sort of act as in an unofficial capacity, you know, they sort of act as a little bit of a man in the middle between what the end user sees from the internet and like the actual internet itself, and acting as this sort of gateway between the user and the rest of the web. Facebook was able to use Onavo as what folks in the media had characterized as a kind of spyware, you know, using it to determine, you know, which companies are up and coming and could, like I said, just a little bit ago, you know, could end up posing a bit of a threat to Facebook.
And it seems interesting that they did that, and kind of, I think the way they were caught was that someone took the time to read all the details of a set of language that was not indicated until after you had signed up for something, but was basically a non-disclosure agreement and end user license agreement or something like that to participate in a Facebook research study. But it wasn't even clear ahead of time that you were doing that. And that was in some way linked to their VPN service. I guess if you're going to be totally open and transparent with somebody about all of your personal information, all of your web searches, whatever, and all of that's going to go through somewhere, obviously it's important that you trust that data provider, that VPN, that whatever you know, source that's going to be. And that's interesting if that's then being, you know, scraped and shared with marketers at that kind of choke point.
Well, I mean,
of all your information going through there.
I mean, even I think that even if it's even if that data isn't being shared with marketer. So again, I it's been a little while. I'm speaking a little outside my depth here, as always on the show. But speaking a little bit outside my depth, it's my understanding that yeah, I guess, you know, Facebook used Onavo data for, I mean, it used it for its own ends, whether or not it was sold, whether or not that data was transmitted or utilized by advertisers on the Facebook platform directly, I'm uncertain. But I do know for relative certainty that Facebook had used Onavo as a research tool to primarily track what teens are using, and that this was used to uncover, you know, some of the social media applications that were gaining a lot of traction, which Facebook summarily purchased or otherwise sort of cut off at the pass.
And one of the things that had also surfaced, and this may have been after Facebook's acquisition of WhatsApp, but was that, you know, for example, people were sending twice as many messages in WhatsApp as were being sent through iMessage, I think, at least in some subset of users.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of, in other words, like, this is not the first time that Facebook has acquired a company. And whether or not the data angle is the primary driving factor behind its acquisition of Giphy, no doubt, if that data is accessible to Facebook, that Facebook will end up using what's probably just going to end up being aggregated user data, just to determine, you know, information about how, I guess, how its property, Giphy, is used on other platforms besides itself. And obviously, so couple of quick things to note. One is that this is a deal that, at least to my understanding, is still in the sort of like proposed phase, right? This is not yet a deal that's been cleared through federal regulators who may have antitrust or privacy concerns to air about this. You know, so that sort of remains to be seen. But I definitely think that this is something that it's a very interesting development in the world of image search and sharing, and may end up being a bit of a boon for Facebook in the long run, depending on how this data is used. Last thing I'll mention about the data before, you know, either before we move on to another subject or whatever, is that it's unclear to the extent to which Giphy is able to access user data on an individual level. And that's because, and as this is, as others have pointed out, that so many of the large services which include Giphy integrations serve content and requests for GIFs from Giphy through proxies. So it may or may not allow Facebook to know. It's probably not going to let Facebook know what individual users are searching for, which might be helpful in terms of mood, might be helpful in terms of understanding the sort of popular culture type properties that folks are consuming, yada yada. So if that data is not accessible, at the very least, Facebook will be able to understand, you know, there are 20% more searches for GIFs through Giphy on Twitter or whatever. Assuming, of course, that any of these partnerships remain if the deal ends up being finalized. It might just be the case that the other platform providers that still continue to use Giphy may go to other providers following this deal, just for those strategic reasons.
Will this change any of your personal actions, Jason?
No, for a couple of different reasons. One, like, at least as it stands right now in May 2020, I've not really been an active user of many of Facebook's platforms for the past couple of years. Maybe WhatsApp notwithstanding. But, like, I've not been an active user of Facebook.com. I've not been an active user of Instagram or its mobile app. There's a few people that I talk to fairly, you know, with any great sort of frequency on WhatsApp, but really that's it. So, long story short, I don't think this is going to materially change any of my behaviors in the short or long run. And even if I was an active user of Facebook or Instagram or any of these other services, of all of the data that Facebook is tracking or could be tracking, I think that the types of animated GIFs that I'm searching for is very low and on my priority stack when it comes to my own data privacy concerns.
Maybe I'm aging myself here. I think I get a lot more than I ever used to, but I'm not somebody who responds to a lot of text messages, even group messages with GIFs.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fuddy-duddy old man in that regard as well. Not calling you a fuddy-duddy old man, Graham, but...
I think you did.
Well...
And that's all right.
I did and I didn't. Anyway, I'm not saying...
I guess I am a fuddy-duddy old man in exactly that regard. Probably several others, as it turns out.
I am... Graham, you are a sprightly young gentleman in his early 30s. You are not a fuddy-duddy old man. Hmm. Let the record show.
I'm going to start responding to text messages only with GIFs then.
Only with GIFs. Seriously.
That'd be an interesting challenge, even for like a day or two, to try to respond to every text with not even emojis, but only a GIF. Ooh. I don't think that would go well for me.
I think
it's like turning it into Dubai Friday or something.
Oh, my poor
Pick
Mike.
One day and only respond to text messages with GIFs.
This week's challenge, GIFs.
Oh, man. Dugga, dugga, dugga.
Dugga, dugga, dugga. Challenge. Okay, so no, I anyway. Don't, in real talk, I don't think that this is going to materially change my own behavior. I do think that it's interesting. Obviously, to the extent to which anybody had profited from that deal, congratulations to them. I wish the team at Giphy only the best, and I encourage both members of the Giphy team and the new sort of overlords of Giphy at Facebook, assuming this deal ends up being cleared by regulators and ends up going through. I just hope that everybody everybody's excellent to one another and does what is in best interest of the users. Whether or not that actually happens, we'll see what happens. Who knows?
More follow-up brewing on the horizon.
Graham, this is the long con of doing podcasts, is that at some point, you can just you record enough information, at some point in time you can just have entire hour-long episodes of just follow-up.
Oh, well, we if we did a better job of follow up, we could probably do that. Not to per se that we do a bad job, but we're probably nearing that point already.
Graham, we're no. Because here's the thing: all of our content is on the it's on the hashtag cutting edge, right? We're on the bleeding edge of technological and venture capital oriented news, and we ain't got no time for follow ups.
Hmm. Hmm. So, Jason, I don't know if in these interesting times, if you've been attending many like virtual happy hours or other things like that. I know I've seen you in at least a couple.
Oh, the ones that you've hosted. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But you know, it's interesting to also look at the trend of kind of real-time communication. And so I think the other topic that we're going to talk about this week is about Andreessen Horowitz's backing of the Clubhouse deal, which is an app that, that allows for real-time, or maybe after the fact, but at least real-time as its primary kind of means of communication, voice-based, I guess, hanging out, it seems.
Yeah.
So it's only got about 5,000 users right now. And Andreessen supposedly backed that deal at a north of $100 million valuation.
Yeah.
Which is obviously pretty high for a company that's still at that early stage, but obviously a founder who also is deeply experienced multi-time entrepreneur.
Yeah. I mean, it's a massive value per user. But if you look at the users of a little app called Clubhouse, you can understand perhaps where some of the value has come from. So in case anybody who's listening to this has been living under a rock slash doesn't spend a lot of time following San Francisco venture capital Twitter, which everybody here would be forgiven for not following. There's an application, a mobile application called Clubhouse that everybody and their venture partners have been using. So Clubhouse, it's a mobile app, facilitates real time and asynchronous voice communication. It sort of is positioning itself as a quote unquote spontaneous social networking application. Where people can go and hang out with their friends. I am not a user. I've also not actively sought a membership or invite to Clubhouse, although I might after this episode, just for market research purposes. It seems to have gotten a lot of traction with the Silicon Valley venture capital crowd. Good for them. What to say about it? I mean, what I think is really interesting is that before we get into any details about the deal itself and what this may or may not mean for other early stage companies that are operating in the startup space in general, but social media more particularly, I just think that right now it's really interesting to see that, as everybody is stuck at home and even as before we were all stuck at home, it seems like in the last 12 months, you know, there's been a lot of interest from entrepreneurs and maybe to a slightly lesser extent investors, but certainly entrepreneurs in developing new and novel social networking applications and platforms.
Yeah, which is interesting, including, you know, other mediums like this. There's a lot of references in at least one of these articles to House Party. And I don't know if you've used House Party, I've spent a decent amount of time on there recently. You know, and House Party is another one where, it's kind of this, the ability to spontaneously connect. And I think is now ranked as the number one social media app in the U.S. and a large number of other countries. So it's interesting to see how.
Whoa, back it up. Fact check. Are you sure? It like outranks like the Twitter machine and the face space.
According to TechCrunch's article that you sent me a link to, it's become the number one social app in 82 countries, including the U.S., and number one overall in 16 countries. Talking about House Party specifically.
Well, now owned if technology
maker
crunch,
of Fortnite.
If technology crunch says that, then in that case, it must be true.
Yeah, and that article was posted on April 18th at 7:22 p.m. our time. So that's a couple weeks ago, but Technology Crunch does say so about House Party. So I think it's interesting to see how people have been craving human-to-human connection in the COVID circumstances. You know, one of the things that this article further points out that I think is applicable to Clubhouse as well as House Party, House Party had seen 70 times increase in its user demand during the COVID times. I don't know what the specific increase is in Clubhouse, probably much less since it's in closed beta still or in some form of beta. But, people are wanting this type of real time, in many cases, face to face or other real time or near real time interaction with deeper experiences than Twitter or other text only or mostly text based social media had been kind of giving them.
Yeah. I mean, what I think is kind of neat is that like it's really neat to see entrepreneurs sort of explore alternate medium or media for human connection, right? So like, you know, we have text, which has been the sort of foundation of the internet since before the internet was the internet, right? Like starting all the way back in the ARPANET days, email was like the killer app of networked computing. Still is in many regards. And then after like email and like the really early days, you know, then it was bulletin boards, and bulletin boards are another text-based sort of like communication tool platform, however you want to phrase it. Also in that same sort of like vintage of technologies as bulletin boards is something like IRC, a chat protocol, which has been like Slack today originally started as an IRC tool and has since sort of built its own sort of protocol around it. But like IRC, like chat, it's all text. Wasn't really until broadband became more of a thing, and really until mobile phones that with cameras that pictures and slightly later video became more of a mainstream medium for getting some sort of social interaction or whatever, either between individuals or between small groups of people or between one person and a large group of people, right? Sites like YouTube, sites like Facebook and Instagram and all the rest, like these are all really good examples. But now that nobody has haircuts, it's really fascinating to see that there's this move away from, and the haircut point is my flippant editorializing here, but like it's funny that now, you know, as we've sort of explored, as everybody's getting all Zoom fatigued and everybody, you know, has weird wacky hair, you know, haircuts or lack thereof or whatever, that we're now starting to explore alternate media besides even just like text and video and images to go just directly to voice. And I think that sort of speaks to the fact that voice and voice, you know, when it's just voice alone, not married to pictures or video, is an incredibly intimate medium to connect and interact with other people.
I didn't think about that. Do you think that people not wanting to kind of put in FaceTime on a camera is what's causing voice-only apps to be more popular now? I guess I didn't think about that. I haven't had a haircut in much, much longer than I have in years. And I haven't shaved in much, much longer than I have in years. Or at least trim my facial hair. But I still show up on video chats all the time.
Yeah, I mean, like, at least for me at work day to day, this is not revealing anything, proprietary or even particularly interesting about my employer, you know, at all. It's that all of the calls that I participated on when I was going through interviews and then going to be onboarded, it was never with faces. It was only voice or only screen sharing. And like even today, you know, all of our almost all of our intra-team communication takes place, if it's going to take place over chat, something like a Skype call, not Skype call. Nobody uses Skype in business anymore. Like a Slack call or a or a Zoom call or whatever, or a Google Hangout even. Like all that stuff happens with cameras off. And to me, at least, like that feels like a much more it's a much less distracting medium, because I'm not focused on the stupid petty stuff that I'd otherwise get a little bit distracted by, which is like, that so and so is wearing the exact same shirt that they've worn for 2 days in a row. Or like, what is that weird? What is that person's dog doing in the background? Or whatever, right? Any of these other number, any of a number of other distracting factors are not present when there's voice around. And also, like, if you're just talking to somebody with voice, I think that it allows people to be a lot more relaxed, because you're not putting on a physical performance for the camera. Like, you're putting on an intellectual performance to ensure that what you're saying is factually true and comes out clearly, but you're not having to like put on a friendly face on top of it and say, "Hi, look at me. I look good and can talk good too." Right?
So you think there's some benefit of whatever you're saying, whatever you're trying to communicate, the point as you express it, standing on its own and it being abstracted somewhat from the way you present it or the way you look presenting it? That's interesting to think about, because a lot of the meetings that I have moved much more, including meetings where I normally wasn't with people, have moved to more video calls. I mean, I would say, just looking at my calendar for today, and today is a Monday and I'm particularly busier on Mondays, but you know, I've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I had 6 meetings today that were video centric, and 3 that weren't. And so I've probably been, before recording this podcast, which we do, by the way, for our listeners, I think we've said this before, on Skype so that we can see one another. That part never gets published, and we doubt ever will. Although, you know, if we get some like massive 1 million
anybody,
listening audience, look, we'll publish it.
Anybody who wants to see two schlubby white dudes from the Midwest yak at one another from their bedrooms, you guys be my guest. Just as long as there's like,
oh, maybe this is a service they can find at the follow on.
Yeah, maybe, which we're not recording today because it's late. But yes, in general, yes, this is exactly the sort of.
But in any case, you know, so it's interesting that you see that as the trend, because I've actually seen the exact reverse. Whereas a lot more meetings, I think more people are at least more of the folks I work with, and that's a small enough kind of microcosm in these handful of meetings. But you know, of the whatever I said, you know, 6 video meetings, 3 non-video meetings, but probably been on video for more than 7 hours today before we started recording this podcast.
Yeah, but being on, it's so confining to be on video. Like, I mean, we record this podcast the way that we do, also because we, you know, we have nice microphones and all the rest, and like, it's totally impractical for me to, and you too, Graham. It would be impractical for us to like what? Like have some sort of like gimbal rig where like we can, have a 20-foot cord on the microphone that'll allow us to, wander around our houses or apartments or whatever while recording. No, like we do this, like the way that we have set this up, it's because it works for the format that we're trying to do. But if you're trying to do just like people, just like the sort of like casual hangout, you know, type aesthetic and interaction that Clubhouse seems to want to be capturing, like that can happen anytime. That can happen when you're doing dishes. That can happen when you're, you know, out for a walk with your dog, significant other, yourself, whatever. Like all those sorts of like really casual type moments do not require video. And at least in my opinion, as someone who's a slightly introverted and doesn't necessarily like spending a ridiculous amount of time on camera, I actually find myself much more willing to be a participant in audio only media, social or otherwise, than I would be if I'm, you know, stuck in front of a camera for any meaningful period of time.
Have you used any of the other tools that are mentioned in at least one of these articles? Discord, High Fidelity, or Loom? And I know Loom is video. I think the other two of those
have
are audio only.
I've not used Loom. Discord recently started using it. So Discord is the tool that, at least for now, for the team size that we have, it works just fine. At least at Golden, we use Discord as our venue for doing like our morning scrum meetings. And again, I guarantee none of this is like proprietary information. And listeners, if you stuck it out, if this is proprietary information, this is buried 55 minutes and 20 seconds into the recording. So this is
good on you.
This is for the real fans.
Super fans.
But like Discord, you know, I've used its audio feature for doing this scrum meetings, you know, at work. But I've also started using Discord recreationally, so to speak, because turns out, you know, like as with so like Slack sort of started as this thing that everybody was using largely with their friends. And then it became this thing that like people started using
tool for work. Yeah.
And then it became a thing that people started using at work. And a lot of the sort of community focused, like the look and like the feeling of using Slack transitioned away from like, oh, hey, I'm like here just like slacking off with my friends, to like, oh shit, like this is a tool that I actually have to use at the jobby job. And so accordingly, like people who wanted to maintain online communities, you know, started searching for other platforms to host those online communities. And Discord, turns out, you know, did end up getting a fair bit of traction amongst, among other things, like the video game community. There's a couple of podcasts that I support through Patreon that have Discord communities, you know, set up. You know, like there's... I play the dumb Animal Crossing game every once in a while, and there's a group of folks that I trade the little stupid virtual turnip assets with. Like there's all sorts of like little things that I now use Discord for. Really, only in the last month, or technically 2 months since I started working at Golden. But really, like all of the community focus, like non-work stuff, I've only started using the last few weeks, and I've really enjoyed it. I've not used any of the chat, like the voice or video chat through Discord, but outside of day job stuff. But the at least the written, you know, text IRC inspired elements of it, I've used quite extensively, and I do enjoy quite a bit. Which is a very protracted answer to your question, Graham. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right, because I've yet to use any of them. And I think that, you know, some of these real-time or asynchronous but video, you know, platforms, I think there's definitely a place for that, you know, in the world. I have left one person a face mail, a video voicemail. It wasn't that there was anything particularly interesting, you know, about that moment, but I called them, they didn't answer. There was something quick I wanted to communicate to them. The platform we were on allowed video, and so I clicked leave a face mail. And I think that's what Google Duo calls, which is like kind of like Hangouts but more designed for, I think, one-on-one calls. It's more like Google's equivalent to FaceTime.
This is a Graham. At some point, we can discuss Google's terrible history with video and chat products. Oh my god! What a special set of decisions that company has made around certain products.
Yes, although I would say that their Duo product I actually like, and I again have used it pretty frequently as of late. And I have left one face mail with it. Although face I think mail. There's more than one app that calls that a face mail.
Face mail.
Or something equivalent.
Here's the thing I want to say about Clubhouse, because I know that we're going to be running long here, is that, and I'm blatantly stealing and paraphrasing and butchering the quote of a tweet from somebody, but Graham, I think that this is something that you'll be able to really vouch for. A lot of folks, when the news about Clubhouse raising all this money, which is, for the record, $10 million in primary, in a primary offering of shares, so origination of new shares, plus a $2 million secondary sale, which presumably redounded in a nice, tidy little payday for founder Paul Davidson. You know, a lot of folks were commenting like, oh, this is a thing that's only used by VCs. Oh, they only have a couple thousand, a few thousand, whatever users. You know, the value of each user to this platform is some obscene number, like $70,000 or $80,000, something like that. You know, some of that is merited, but to steal an unattributed quote from a venture investor, because I don't have their tweet in front of me and I forgot who tweeted it. You know, it's this idea that that venture investors don't mark up the past in terms of accomplishments. They discount the future in terms of potential. In other words, the $100 million by this reading, the $100 million valuation plus or minus that Clubhouse earned in its round is not necessarily a slap on the back and congratulations for the traction that they got to date, which in raw numerical terms is quite minimal. Right, we're talking about less than 10,000 active users, but that the investors behind the deal see a much greater potential for the company going forward, and that they're trying to get in while the getting is good.
Yeah, and that definitely makes sense. I've certainly seen that even in much smaller deals where there becomes a premium because you either know somebody else who is participating or you know somebody who you're bidding against and you know what their history is. And so while, of course, you know, the past does not indicate, you know, future performance, blah, 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 insert generic disclaimer here. I think that, you know, a lot of times that happens. And there's an episode of Silicon Valley that comes close to making fun of exactly that point in a really good way. But anyway, you know, I think that that's exactly right. I wonder if either this or things like this are putting a COVID, and this is going to sound weird to say, I wonder if this or things like this is putting a COVID premium on this deal that wouldn't apply in non-COVID times. And I wonder if in post-COVID times, which, you know, there's still a lot of question about how quickly we'll get there. But there's also a lot of signs of our country and the world beginning to return to normal, even if various elements of that return to normal take many weeks, months, or unfortunately, even years in some cases and for some industries. But I wonder if we're ascribing a COVID premium to this level of growth and things will kind of run away in terms of valuation. And then there won't be as many users or the ability or interest of users to follow the same types of patterns once you go back to living what we thought of as a quote unquote normal life leading up to 60 to 90 days ago. So in short, I wonder if Andreessen here or if things like this have a COVID premium applied to their short-term success and the circumstances that we're all living in that may or may not really apply in a long-term fund life kind of time horizon. I just wonder.
If worse comes to worse, Clubhouse could always just sell to Facebook for $400 million.
Yeah, but probably not. If they only have 5,000 users, there won't be enough people that Facebook can ostensibly track a bunch of information about to find out what other apps they're using.
Hey, look, at these sorts of multiples, all Clubhouse needs to get to is 20,000 users, and then it can be also valued at $400 million.
Oh, it's true.
So, yeah, who knows?
But well, is that a good place to wrap it up, Jason?
Yeah, probably. We could probably ramble for another 10-ish minutes, but let's for once have some respect for our listeners' time.
Oh boy.
All right, man. I'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Yeah, this weekend probably.
Oh yeah. I look forward to it.
All right, man. Chat soon.